Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is JNYGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, and Ellie Sturton. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. At their monthly meeting on Thursday, June 19th, the Kingston Police Service Board received a presentation on a new community drug checking program that has already shown promise in improving public health and safety in the region. The initiative is part of Ontario's drug checking community, a leader in the delivery of these services and community-led monitoring of the unregulated drug supply. The program was launched by Toronto's drug checking service in 2019. The program offers drug users the ability to have their unregulated drugs tested before consumption to ensure they're not contaminated or in unexpected concentration. It also provides a snapshot of the unregulated drug supply market in Kingston, data that is made available to all those impacted and the general public through emergency alerts and monthly reports. Kingston became the first jurisdiction outside of Toronto to join the initiative in November 2024. With the long-term goal of establishing at least one drug checking site in each of Ontario's 29 public health unit regions. Locally, the program operates through the Integrated Care Hub on Montreal Street. Karen McDonald, Executive Director of Toronto's Drug Checking Service and Ontario's Drug Checking Community, presented an in-depth overview of the program's structure, impact, and findings.
So our program is made up of three groups. There are collection sites, analysis sites, and then the central operating team. So collection sites are community agencies that are exempted to collect samples from and share results with service users. Their, main role, like the Integrated Care Hub, is just to, have existing and trusted relationships with people who use drugs, collect samples, share results, and really educate their communities about what it is that's circulating. Next, we have analysis sites. So these are the purple. We currently have three. These are clinical research or government labs that are exempted to analyze samples and report drug checking results. And we're super fortunate. These are, scientific experts who are incredibly skilled at determining the composition of really any specimen, and we're using drugs. And then we have the central operating team. So that's the team that I run at St. Michael's Hospital, super small team. Our job is really just to make the lives of the collection sites and the analysis sites easier.
Justine McIsaac, Coordinator of Consumption and Treatment Services at Kingston's ICH, offered context on the implementation of the program in Kingston.
Just to give you some context as to why we decided to start drug checking in our community is because we have a bunch of people that are very unwell and are using substances that are very dangerous to not only the people that use them, but the greater community. And our goal with this program was to give people a better knowledge of what it was they were using, as well as the community. Initially, I piloted a project with a local group through Queens, which is called Spectroplasmatics. I helped them write a grant to Health Canada to pilot their equipment with the support of the municipality as well. In turn, that allowed me to get the equipment for free, which is a $30,000 piece of equipment. And I have worked on that relationship with them since. The machine itself takes a very small amount of the substance or a piece of equipment that person has used to inject the substance, and we will test that, and it'll tell us exactly what is in the substance that the person used.
McIsaac, drawing from firsthand experience at the ICH, emphasized that the program had an immediate life-saving impact.
Somebody presented a substance to me that looked like MDMA, which is considered a party drug. It's very casually used amongst young people in college, universities, things like that. This drug presented as if it was what it was, and it was not. It looked like MDMA. It was stamped as if it was MDMA, and it turned out to be pill-pressed fentanyl. Now, the risks for that individual who has no opioid dependency whatsoever, that would have been consequential and most likely would have resulted in death for that individual if they had not come in and tested that drugs. Because he brought that sample in and I was able to test it, I was able then to work with public health and formulate a community alert to warn people that there were substances in our community that looked like something else, but actually weren't what they were presenting to be.
In her presentation, McDonald shared what they've uncovered about the unregulated drug supply. The primary focus was on fentanyl and other opioids. While a common fear is party drugs being laced with fentanyl, the more common case is fentanyl being contaminated with other substances or having unpredictable concentration.
We have checked over 8,000 samples that were not expected to be opioids, and we've actually only confirmed fentanyl or another high-potency opioid in 11 of those. So certainly not to say that it doesn't happen. The risks are incredibly high, but I do think there's just this general conception that this happens all the time. And what kind of worries me about that messaging is just that we're detracting from the population of people who are actually at risk. If we're putting all of our focus on, you know, people who use cocaine and MDMA and their risk of being contaminated by fentanyl, we're kind of ignoring the population of people who actually are at risk and dying.
In Toronto, only 3% of fentanyl samples tested were found to contain what users believed they were consuming. Although fewer samples have been collected in Kingston to date, the trend is similar.
And on the Kingston front, not a single fentanyl sample that has been collected by the Integrated Care Hub since we launched this service has met service users' expectations. So every single sample has been contaminated with unexpected drugs.
Fentanyl samples are often contaminated with other high-potency opioids, as well as central nervous system and respiratory depressants like benzodiazepines and animal tranquilizers. McIsaac noted that this contamination significantly impacts operations at the ICH, especially complicating overdose responses.
When we first opened, an opioid overdose response was pretty cut and dry. Now it has become so complicated that we've had to change our whole process of how we respond to overdoses to ensure that we're keeping people as safe as possible. So we're constantly on a learning curve as to how we can treat people appropriately and keep them as safe as possible.
In addition to contamination, the strength of fentanyl in the unregulated supply is highly unpredictable, with concentrations fluctuating drastically.
For one thing, what does that mean for the person who's using the drug? Are they experiencing withdrawal? But also think about if you were to flip it the other way, someone's tolerance is kind of down because the fentanyl supply is quote unquote weaker. And then suddenly the next month it increases by 5 times the amount. Of course, the risk of overdose is going to be higher.
Members of the Kingston Police Service Board recently visited the collection site at the ICH. Board member Adam Coven remarked on the strong trust that has developed between service providers and people seeking services, a key factor in the program's effectiveness.
Going to the site yesterday was amazing for so many reasons, but one of the things that I applaud is that here in Kingston, which is the only center that we know of, the amount of trust that obviously has gone on because of your services, your staff, your support. Without breaching that trust to the people that are coming to you, which amazes me. I'm standing there with the chief and deputy police, and we have people that you're saying are coming in with their drugs and their testing. It's an amazing amount of trust.
Board Chair Jared Stearns asked the first question in the Q&A portion of the presentation.
If fentanyl is like so dirty or unpredictable, why is it the drug of choice for so many people?
Unfortunately, the population that I work with has opioid dependency, so they're physically dependent on it. Primarily, the population before bootleg fentanyl was introduced to the market, primarily people were using OxyContin. It was overprescribed, but we didn't see near the amount of deaths associated because it was prescription grade. People developed a tolerance to it. They knew how to dose themselves appropriately. This is kind of what's available in the illicit market. And really, it's, in my opinion, people just taking advantage of very vulnerable, sick people in the long run. But yeah, it's not necessarily about choice. It's about there's no other option for people in the illicit market. obviously, from a treatment perspective, as a support worker, I'm always looking for ways and means to reduce people's risk of either their use or overdose, whether it be through methadone, Suboxone, Sublocade, things like that. But it's unfortunately, it's not a choice at this point. It's what's on the market.
And are you seeing overdoses daily?
Yes.
When asked how this information can be used to find and remove the toxic drug supply, McDonald and McIsaac both stated that this would require larger solutions, but the program can still be a level of intervention.
From my perspective, the supply is always going to be toxic if it's unregulated. I'm not sure, like at this time, what our service and police can do to really like clean up the supply. Interestingly, what we have seen is that one of the primary things that people, service users, do with their results is go back to the person they bought their drugs from and put kind of what we call grassroots pressure on the supply. So going back to someone and saying, I bought this, but I'm actually getting this. I don't want this thing. I'm either not going to use it. I'm going to go find it from someone else, or at least just like providing that feedback. So like that's there as well.
I'm just sharing the knowledge with each other too. Like I said, you know, ensuring that our constables that are out on road dealing with people every day, they have an understanding of what's going on in community and behaviors associated to drug use, and are well equipped to try and support and deal with some of that.
Finally, when asked what message they most wanted Kingston police to take away, McDonald and McIsaac offered the following.
Watching how complex people's mental health and substance use needs have become, I've also watched in the years that I've been doing this work, the expectations of police on road grow to an unrealistic expectation. I've watched police become police to crisis workers, to triage workers, to finding people shelter, to dealing with complex mental health and substance use needs, to responding to overdoses. This is really, I feel like, has really impacted policing. And so first off, I'd like to thank you guys for everything that you do. But I think the takeaway is that for me in working with this complex population is that, please forgive me, but the intent is to get high, not to die. People are seeking momentary relief from like excruciating physical, mental, and emotional pain. And it's really the bigger picture as to what happened to these people along the way. It's not necessarily what's wrong with you, it's what happened to you, and how much we need to invest in caring for a very vulnerable, complex population, and looking for ways and means to help them not only deal with the traumas that they carry, but feel supported and accepted and develop new coping techniques for themselves. Unfortunately, drugs have a functional purpose for some people, and generally they start using drugs because they served a purpose for them. But as I've watched people go through this very complex, hard lifestyle, I've seen it create more chaos, more trauma, more hurt for these individuals, and it really doesn't get them any further. So I think the takeaway should be is, A, we need to be a lot kinder to our police that are doing the best they can in a community or communities with little resources to help this crisis, but that people are not enjoying this. They're not out living a free-for-all. This is not them not wanting to be better or not wanting to work or not wanting to have housing. It's their needs are just so complex, and they're just really sick, hurting people. And we need to remember that day in and day out, that these are still members of our community that need love and acceptance.
I guess key takeaways from me would be, first, that we need to accept in rare cases, fentanyl is not what is contaminating other things. In fact, it is fentanyl that is contaminated, and that is really what is driving this crisis. And, you know, we really do need timely and accessible information about what is circulating in the drug supply and public information, you know, regardless of whether you're focused on community safety, harm reduction, treatment, prevention, understanding what it is that's in the drug supply is crucial. So I think just like, you know, the more information that we can try to generate and make publicly available and then just really work together to respond, there is no, you know, there is no single response to this crisis clearly, and it is persisting. So I think, yeah, just as much collaboration as possible, kind of, you know, and just recognizing that everybody's doing their best, but also recognizing the incredibly important role that like each different stakeholder plays.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
This is Jesse Bell with a local sports report for the Kingston region. The OSFL regular season came to a close on Sunday, so let's do a quick recap of the three seasons for the Kingston Grenadiers. The U14 Grenadiers had a great learning season, but that doesn't necessarily translate to a lot of regular season success. They dropped their opening contest on May 10th, 36-0, before getting a huge win in their follow-up against the Oshawa Hawkeyes, 42-0. They dropped close games to the Ottawa Myers Riders and the Peel Panthers, before closing out their season with back-to-back losses against the North Halton Crimson Tide and the Durham Dolphins. Though not a great statistical season for the Grenadiers, the U14 squad is a new one in the grand scheme of things and certainly learned a great deal about the level of competition seen in OSFL football. The U16 Grenadiers are a great deal more established, with the modern iteration of this U16 squad dating back to the 2009 season, so over the course of 16 years, they've got a lot more experience under their belt, and that showed in the 2025 season. They had a season-opening loss, 22-0, to the Cumberland Panthers, before rolling off multiple wins in a row, five straight, in fact, with victories over Oshawa, Ottawa Myers Riders, the Peel Panthers, the Brampton Bulldogs, before dropping a game to the Durham Dolphins. But they did close out their season with a victory over the Vaughan Rebels, and now await their playoff matchup. No matter how the U16 season ends, it was a great one for the team. A lot of regular season success as they look forward to a playoff date and the potential to make a long run in the OSFL playoffs. We save the best for last as the U18 Grenadiers have had a season to remember, running the table, a perfect regular season with major victories over the Cumberland Panthers, the Brampton Bulldogs, and the Durham Dolphins. They will be the number one seed heading into the OSFL playoffs, and they look primed for a big run to perhaps the first championship in team history. And that is your local sports recap, putting a spotlight on the OSFL and the Kingston Grenadiers. This is Jesse Bell signing off from the CFRC Sports Desk. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Monday, June 30th, daytime high of 26 degrees with a real feel in the humidity of 29, mix of sun and cloud throughout the day dropping down to 20 overnight. Tuesday, July 1st, Canada Day, we have a risk for a thundershower in the morning, about 40%, but that'll give way to mostly sunny conditions and a daytime high of 25 in the afternoon. Wednesday, July 2nd, a bit more rain in the forecast. Daytime high of 23, feeling closer to 25, so a little cooler than days past, and a 60% chance of precipitation. Thursday, July 3rd, daytime high of 23 degrees, feeling closer to 25, with a 63% chance of rain throughout the day, dropping down to 13 overnight. Friday, July 4th, daytime high of 22, and it's going to feel like 23, so a lovely day here in the city of Kingston, mostly sunny conditions with a few clouds sprinkled throughout. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, July 5th, daytime high of 24 with mostly sunny conditions. High UV index, though, projected to be 10, so Get that sunscreen on, folks. Sunday, July 6th, the sun gives way to rain. 55% chance of precipitation in the region. Daytime high of 24. Will be quite humid, feeling closer to 28. And then the start of next week, Monday, July 7th, we're going to see a daytime high of 24 with a 55% chance of precipitation. Here is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. The LaSalle Causeway will be closed on the following dates, July 1st, 6th, 13th, 20th, and 27th, August 3rd, 10th, 17th, 24th, and 31st, and September 7th. All of these days, it will be closed from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Shifting now to the fall, some select locations when the LaSalle Causeway will also be closed from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., September 21st, October 5th, 14th and 19th, and November 2nd and 16th. Here are your road closures for the week. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Barrack Street, Bagot to Rideau is closed June 30th, July 2nd, and 3rd from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day to accommodate road repair and resurfacing work. Cassidy Street, Montreal to Maple is closed until July 4th as part of the ongoing intersection improvements of Montreal and John Counter. Carlton Street, Alfred to Guy is closed June 30th to August 8th for a gas main installation. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Guy Street, Carlton to Division is also closed June 30th to August 8th for gas main installation. King Street, Brock to Clarence is closed July 1st from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. for the City of Kingston Canada Day event. Market Street, King to Ontario is closed June 30th at 8 a.m. to July 2nd at 12 p.m. for the City of Kingston Canada Day event. Ontario Street, Brock to Clarence is closed July 1st from 8 a.m. to 11:59 p.m. for the City of Kingston Canada Day event. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett is also closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Accommodation Road, 6th concession to White Church, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Abbeydon Road, Middle to Highway 2, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catterockway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic is down to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Garrett Road, 6th concession to Sandhill, expect delays while a contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Highway 2 to Abbeydon and St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road. And White Church Road, 6th concession to Woodburn, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract.
Now coming up, we'll have a look at some great community events running in Kingston and the area this week. On Monday, Art Fest Kingston continues at City Park from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can explore over 165 artist booths, check out the J. Bell Redbird Indigenous Arts Pavilion, and enjoy poetry readings, kids' art tents, yoga, tarot card readings, face painting, and food trucks. It's free and family-friendly. On Tuesday, Art Fest wraps up with its final day in City Park, open again from 10 to 5 p.m. And of course, it's Canada Day, so there's lots going on. The Great Canadian Stroll and Roll Parade kicks off at 11:30 a.m. from the Metro lot at Berry Street. Families are encouraged to decorate bikes, strollers, scooters, and wagons for a fun parade down Princess Street towards Ontario Street. At 12:30 p.m., opening remarks and cake cutting happen in Confederation Park, along with activities like rock climbing, inflatables for the kids, and face painting. Then cap off your Canada Day with the fireworks display at 10 p.m., visible from Confederation Park or Springer Market Square. Bring a chair and arrive early to grab a good spot. On Wednesday, Games in the Square returns to Springer Market Square from 6 to 8 p.m. Drop in for a fun evening of giant board games like Connect Four, Chess, and Snakes and Ladders. It's free, open to all ages, and a great way to enjoy a midweek summer night downtown. On Thursday, Stories in the Square starts at 10:30 a.m. at the City Hall Amphitheater. This free drop-in story time is hosted by the Kingston Frontenac Public Library and is perfect for kids of all ages. If the weather's bad, it will move indoors to the Central Branch. In the evening, Life Drawing is on at Art Noise from 6 to 8 p.m. Doors open at 5:30 and it's just $10 to drop in and practice figure drawing in a welcoming space. Then head to Springer Market Square for Movies in the Square. This week's feature is Legally Blonde with pre-movie fun including a glitter bar and nail stickers from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. The movie starts at dusk, so bring your own lawn chair and enjoy a night under the stars. On Friday, folks can head back to Springer Market Square from 6 to 7 p.m. for free line and square dancing lessons. Whether you're new or experienced, it's a great way to kick off your Friday night in the square before the live country music begins. On Saturday, it's time for the Bloomin'Berry Strawberry Social at the Spire from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Enjoy strawberry shortcake, garden games, crafts, live music, and a strawberry hat parade, all in support of the Bloom Skills Center. Admission is $15 and includes dessert, drinks, and activities. And finally on Sunday, start your day off with Yoga in the Park at Battery Park from 10 to 11 a.m. This free outdoor session is led by local instructors and you just need to bring a mat. In the afternoon, Baha'i Fireside Sunday happens at 2 p.m. in the lower hall at the Spire. It's an open, informal discussion about unity and peace, hosted by the Baha'i community of Kingston. Refreshments are served and all are welcome. Have a local event that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via CFRC.ca. Hey folks, I'm Ellie Sturton, and coming up are your live music events happening around town this week. On Monday, celebrate the night before Canada Day with a few great options. The Cove Inn is hosting a pre-Canada Day party from 7 to 11 p.m. with high-energy East Coast tunes and a buffet dinner. For country fans, head to the Kingston Grand Theatre at 7 p.m. for Mo Pitney with openers Honky Tonk Heart and Griffin McGill. And if you're looking to jam, Rosewell Rehearsals is hosting an afternoon hang from 1 to 3 p.m. It's just $10 to join and snacks are included. Or for a welcoming night of music, the Gender Diverse Song Circle invites trans, non-binary, and gender diverse folks to sing and connect beginning at 6 p.m. Location is to be announced. On Tuesday, it's Canada Day, and at the Cove Inn, Soulfire is live on the patio from 6 to 9 p.m. for a free all-ages show. At the Mansion, the A-List Festival runs from 1 to 9 p.m. with food, drinks, giveaways, and a full lineup of local bands with tickets starting at $15. Folks can head to Confederation Park, which hosts live sets from Kevin Head, Brass Over Tea Kettle, and Los Garcias. Or head to Springer Market Square, which turns into a giant dance floor from 6 to 10 p.m., headlined by Scratch Bastard. At West Swinks Island Park, there's a full day of Canada Day fun with live music from local bands, vendors, and comedians running from 9:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. On Wednesday, pop by the Mansion for surf rock and rockabilly with the Surfer Jets and Bloodshot Bill starting at 7 p.m. for just $25. Or catch Swingin' Summer in Springer Market Square with the Frontenac Community Band from 7 to 8 p.m. On Thursday, the Holly Road Country Jamboree kicks off in Corbyville at 7 p.m. See a stacked lineup of Canadian country talent. Tickets start at $44.25 and fundraise for Camp Trillium. You can hear pianist Agne Radzevichite and Dmitry Lekovich perform classical selections at St. Paul's Church at 3:15 p.m. Tickets are $45 for adults and $22.50 for youth. Or dance the night away at Musiki Cafe's vinyl DJ party from 8 to 11. Entry is by donation. On Friday, catch day two of the Holly Road Country Jamboree in Corbyville. You'll see Aaron Goodwin, Rudy Gunn, and more. Or head to Hotel Wolf Island for day one of the Analog Island Festival, a night of experimental music, live bands, and vinyl DJ sets. Day passes for that one are $30. The mansion hosts Metal Night with Doom Boys, The Pale Horse Ritual, Arachnia, and more. Doors open at 8 p.m. and tickets are $11.98. Now, if country's more your thing, Ambush plays a free outdoor set at Springer Market Square from 7 to 8. And later that night, at The Merchant, Squid Pistol hits the stage with high-energy alternative rock covers from 10:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. On Saturday, start with Saturday Sessions, live music in Confederation Park from 11:30 to 3:30. This week features Django's Kitchen, Oscar Bossax, and Mauricio and the Latin Beat Band. Or, over at Base 31's Drill Hall, Montreal Dream Pop Legends stars hit the stage with Ruby Waters at 7:30 p.m. Tickets start at $55. And the Holyrood Country Jamboree continues in Corbyville with a stacked Day 3 lineup including George Canyon, Mackenzie Leigh Meyer, Fiddlesticks, and more. And at Hotel Wolf Island, the Analog Island Festival continues with experimental sets, film screenings, and queer karaoke. Also on Saturday, the Mansion Summer Kickoff Fest goes from 3 to 10 p.m. on the patio with plenty of live bands, barbecue, lawn games, and sunshine. Tickets start at $22.63. And if you're looking for something nostalgic, catch a Beatles tribute show at the Spire from 7 to 9:45 p.m. Tickets are $42.50 and the event fundraises for food and housing programs through Lion's Heart, Inc. And finally on Sunday, start your day off with jazz brunch at the Black Dog Tavern from 11:30 to 2:30 p.m. Or at Time Out Bar and Bistro, folks can see Lady and the Lads perform classic country starting at 3 p.m. Over at Finkelshore Park, Live Music Sundays runs from 2 to 5 p.m. with David Shutter at 2, Barry Ewan and his trio at 3, and Willows and Oaks at 4. At Hotel Wolf Island, Day 3 of the Analog Island Festival runs from 12 to 5:30 p.m. and features jazz, ambient, and experimental performances with Tone Map and Wallace, Potions, and Sandro Perry. And finally, folks can see the Co-Conspirators perform live at the Opinicon from 1 to 4 p.m. with a relaxing set of acoustic folk and roots by the canal. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.